everybody, and welcome to a new episode of Gaming in the Wild, a video games podcast about games from the artistic, creative side of the tracks, from indie to AAA. My name's John, I'm your host. I'm recording from the Staffordshire countryside. I'm still back in the UK right now after an action-packed week at WASD, or WASD, or WASD, or however you like to say that. I was down in London this week for that event to try out some games, to walk around the show floor. It's a showcase type event. There were also some talks, some conferences, all of that kind of thing. I also met some friends, saw some art, and had a little bit of a holiday while I was there as well. So it's been a really good week, a really action-packed week. It does still mean that I'm still away from my home studio back in Reykjavik, Iceland, but I'll be heading back there in just a couple of days. So if this episode sounds any different to usual, it's because I'm recording on a compressed setup that I could throw into my case. But today's episode is going to be just a rundown of everything that happened at WASD, the people I met, the games I got to play, and just telling you all about how it was, I think. I mean, when I think about PAX and GDC and all of those fun events, Gamescom, all of those games events dotted around the world, I follow the coverage of them pretty closely. I like to hear what games are on show. I like to hear from people about what the scene was like there. And so I actually got to go to one, and today's episode will be me sharing that experience with you. I assume that many of you out in the States and spread across Europe have similar fear of missing out when it comes to WASD. So I will share the experience and tell you what I played. And there were really quite a lot of good games there too. A lot of game developers around, a lot of interesting games industry people around. So there was some good conversations, some good times, and it was a really fun experience. I will also say that I was recording voice notes on my phone as I was walking around. It turns out that iPhones have gotten a lot better over time. The voice recorder actually does pretty good voice recordings now and filters out background sound quite a lot. So as I was walking around, I was taking a couple of voice notes and chatting to a couple of people. And I'm going to throw all of that together for a Patreon episode. So if you would like to hear some notes on the ground, I was with my friend Kieran Daly, a sometime guest on the show, as I was walking around. And me and Kieran did a little pre-game every day and a little wrap-up at the end of every day as well. And I'm going to throw all of those together into a patron-only episode for the patrons. And there was actually a new patron this week. So thank you very much to Alex for joining up. There's been quite a few patrons this month. So thank you as well to Liz, Steve, JD and Zibby, all of whom joined up in the last month. Patrons get access to a whole load of patron-only episodes, behind-the-scenes and off-topic stuff like music, video game music, spoiler casts, travel diaries, all of that kind of thing. The WASD behind-the-scenes episode will be one of those. And I do tend to think of the podcast that you're listening to now that goes out onto the public feed as the main show, but for enthusiasts or people that want a little extra, these behind-the-scenes episodes give people that. So if you are a listener who would like a little more Gaming in the Wild, then it's patreon.com/gamingintheWild, and you can sign up for $1 a month. There are a couple of other perks, like joining our patron-only Discord server, which is a really nice little corner of the internet to chat about games. So I'll leave a little link in the description for the Patreon if that's something that interests you. And with all of that said, let's move on and talk about all of the games in the week that I just spent down at WASD. So I haven't been to an event like this before, and I wasn't exactly sure what to expect. I have seen footage of E3 on YouTube, but I've never been to one of these before, so it was really interesting to go. WASD Live is a PAX-style showcase event with a few conference-y bits. It is held in the Truman Brewery building on Brick Lane in London. It's an area that I was familiar with. I used to work there for a short while, doing like a freelance gig for a PR company. So it was really nice to be back on Brick Lane and back in East London to see how it's changed. It had some nice nostalgia for me. But the Truman Brewery is a giant old brewery building with a huge chimney that has long since been converted into a space with all sorts of shops, bars, creative spaces, and the exhibition space that WASD was held in. When you walk up the stairs and get in there, it's in a big, airy white room with a glass ceiling. So it's got some soft light in there. There were people milling around all over the place. There was a show floor with tons of playable games, various little rooms dotted around through corridors and doorways. There was a small stage with, I would say, I guess, about 100 seats that was hosting talks throughout the weekend and throughout the week. A lot were aimed at students about getting into the games industry. But on Saturday, there were a few more focused ones that were talking about things like the rise of cozy games and giving advice on pitching games to publishers. So a lot of game dev focused stuff, a lot of games industry focused stuff. There was also a main stage in a dark room that had more like flashy Instagram palette gamer lights where they were hosting Let's Plays and competitive events and that sort of thing. I didn't spend much time in there, but there was a program of Let's Plays as well. And I was there with Kieran Daly, who is a regular guest on this show, especially at Games of the Year time. Kieran is working on a game himself and has been putting together his game design document. We were staying together and we talked about his game, and it was really interesting to walk around with him. Kieran was really great company, so thanks, Kieran, if you are listening, for that great weekend. It was fun being there together. We both got media passes. I got a creator pass because of this podcast. Kieran got a press pass because he has worked in the tech press. So we each had little side rooms to hang out in. So if it got a little bit too busy on the floor, if we'd a bit too tired, we could go and put our feet up, get a free coffee and a bag of mini cheddars or whatever, and talk to some of the creators and press people. So it was a nice setup. We were there for most of the days. You can get day passes or week passes, but me and Kieran went on all 3 days, mostly as various people were drifting in and out on day passes that we wanted to say hello to and to meet. And also because there were quite a few games to play, you can't fit them all into one day unless that is literally all you are doing. And it is a very social event, more so than I expected, actually. But in the main hall, you may have seen pictures of this kind of thing. There were like ranks and ranks of tables. Each one had like a big area for a graphic to be, like a huge poster. You walk over, you talk to whoever is running the stand. There is a gaggle of people around all of the games just watching people play. There is no queuing system exactly. You just hang around until the seat is free and it feels roughly your turn. And then you get to sit down and play a little. Each booth also has a screen, just a monitor, a basic monitor, a mouse, keyboard, controller, whatever you need to play the game, and a pair of headphones. Some of the devs did bring noise excluding headphones, which I thought were really good, actually. Noise cancelling headphones came in very handy in that busy environment, a little bit echoey, a lot of people talking. But it was great. You just get to walk around, look at the games. If there is an empty seat, you can grab it. If there is a queue, you have to wait. But milling around for 3 days, I got to play everything I wanted to play in the end. Some games were harder to get on than others. I noticed that the game Paper Trail, which you may have seen in recent showcases, had a constant gaggle of people standing around waiting to play, whilst right next to it, there was a really cool but very complex-looking 4X strategy game, which often had an empty seat. So I was lingering around trying to get on Paper Trail for a while, and I noticed the empty seat and sat down and played it. The guy who was guiding players was really friendly and helpful. And he did say it's quite a complex game, but he helped me get through my little half-hour session with that as well. So in this episode, I will run through all of 10 games that I sat down and spent a significant amount of time with. I did hop on and off lots of other games too, but I thought for the sake of brevity, I will narrow it down to 10 that I thought was worth telling you about. The games were roughly divided up to, there was the main floor. Devolver Digital had the biggest booth. It was about a quarter of the hall, and they had lots of fancy stuff there, like a big fluffy Cult of the Lamb walking around, the guy from Angerfoot, the guy from Hotline Miami. So they went all in on this, and there was like a dress-up box where you can put on Devolver stuff and a photo background. Lots of the developers only had one computer. Some had rented out a whole row of booths and had four, so they could seat more people. And there's lots of social stuff too, like a drinks and food area. We can get coffee and snacks and stuff. And I will say that there were a big part of WASD, much more so than I expected. I don't know why, but in my head it was going to be a very game-focused event where I played a lot. But for a lot of it, I was just talking to people. Some really good random conversations happened, like whilst you're queuing for a beer or whatever. I met some people that work in localization. And we had a really interesting conversation about the ins and outs of localization, about trying to translate idioms from one language to another and how to do that. Do you go literal and let people know it's an idiom? Do you translate it into something similar and risk losing the meaning? So that was just a really good random chat. I met a whole bunch of developers whilst sitting around or just drinking coffee or whatever, one of whom had made a sound installation that was on show. I met a programmer from Need for Speed, and we were talking about driving games. I met a VR content creator called Tigress X, who I've still since hopped over on Twitch and followed. I met Jem, who was a community manager for Raw Fury and was showing off a couple of Raw Fury games. And a lot of press people as well from various companies. But as well as the chance meetings and the new faces, I also did bump into some people that I know and that you might know too. And one of them was The Indie Gamer. He runs a channel called that on YouTube, who has been very supportive of Gaming in the Wild's video stuff. They were there. We said hello. We had a good chat about YouTube editing, about the algorithm, about games and the scene generally. Really nice to meet The Indie Gamer. Also met a few folks from Lost in Cult, including Sean. He was their new project manager, very mellow, good vibes kind of person, who is also a listener of this podcast, I believe. So hello, Sean, if you're listening as well. Lost in Cult had a really nice stand. I have their Sable book, and I have pre-ordered their Immortality and Citizen Sleeper books, but it was lovely to leaf through some of the lock-on magazines, and apparently they sold out, so well done to them, and it went really well, I think, for them. I also met Aaron, a.k.a. Arkan, a podcast patron who works on Vampire Survivor over at Ponkle. Met a couple of the Vampire Survivor team. Louis from Time Played 3HR showed up, another podcast guest who you will have heard from if you've listened to all of the Games of the Year episodes. It was absolutely delightful to meet Louis. I'm a big Time Played 3HR fan. And Louis, although the podcast isn't so regular anymore, they still put out the odd one. And Louis has instead pivoted to making games. So we had a good chat about game development, about how Monuments to Guilt, Louis' first game, went, which you can find on Itch. We talked about driving games and podcasting. And I also got to meet Gareth Damian Martin, a game developer that you might know, who has become very successful since Citizen Sleeper. I really like Gareth's work. I really like Heterotopia's magazine. I like Gareth's games. And Gareth has been on the show. I interviewed Gareth back when they released their first game, In Other Waters. We talked a little bit about In Other Waters. We had a good half-hour chat, actually. We talked about video game ecosystems. We talked about Ultros, Rain World. Gareth had some nice things to say about Rain World, naturally encouraged me to try that game again. We also talked about Horizon and Avatar. It's interesting talking to Gareth about those games. Apparently, the Avatar game has an ecosystem and an economy that Gareth was very into, including upgradable weapons, where rather than using currency, you use various natural resources and you have to get to know the plants and get to know the world. So that was a very interesting conversation. We also did discuss Citizen Sleeper 2, which is currently in development. It was really nice to talk to Gareth about that. Gareth was talking about the elements of crew that will be in this game, having had an interest in games like Mass Effect and things like Farscape and Firefly, and having a ship that you can move around. So that's a very exciting idea, because in Citizen Sleeper, of course, we were in Erlin's Eye, a space station. And so to be in the Citizen Sleeper world, but to be able to move around from place to place and experience different environments, sounds very exciting to me. So that was a real pleasure. It was a real pleasure to meet Gareth Damian Martin. I'm a huge fan, and they were just lovely, personable, and nice to talk to. And if you'd like to see pictures of me with all of these happy faces and interesting people, I did post some to Twitter and Instagram at Gaming in the Wild. But to move on to the games, I've cut it up into two sections here. I have a handful of games from the show floor. I think six different games from the show floor. There was also an area tucked away in the back, which was called the Curios area, which was games that don't have publishers attached to them or are solo development projects and that kind of thing. Smaller games, basically. And as you'd expect, the Curio section turned out to be one of the more interesting sections of the exhibition floor. But I did start off in the main area with a couple of appointments. So there were a couple of people that reached out to me ahead of time and arranged to have me come sit down and play the games, which I really appreciated. And the first appointment that I had was to play Nano Apostle. This is a game that I reported on in my GDC video on YouTube. It is a top-down twin-stick kind of game, made by 18 Light, published by P-Cube, and it's coming out sometime this year. But the twist here is that it's a boss rush game. We don't see many boss rush games. We see boss rush modes. I keep wanting to say Bosch Russ, but no, it's boss rush. We see boss rush modes, but we don't see many games focused on that. I did play one called Fury that I really got into for a while. It's a fun idea to just trim out all of the other stuff and just have a pure boss rush game. But this one is based slightly on Hyperlight Drifter's combat style, I would say. And it does have a story. We start off waking up in a sci-fi world. It's a top-down game, pixel art. We play as a young girl who doesn't know quite why she has woken up in this facility. And we meet some other characters, like a woman who runs the facility and seems to know things. And we get a little robot helper who acts as the tutorial giver and also is useful in battle as well. There is a little story there if you want it, and I think that the graphics are very nice, a nice sci-fi style. But before you know it, you are pushed into combat, and that's what the game really is all about. It's a series of tense battles with huge bosses. Much like Hyperlight Drifter, you can dodge, you can block, parry, dash, you can reflect projectiles. So you have a pretty good moveset right from the off. You can also strike. If you do strike, you charge up your projectiles. So there's an element of choosing your moment, dashing in, hanging back, shooting, choosing your moment again. The bosses have pretty varied movesets. There is a tutorial boss that shows you the ropes, but then the first boss is rock hard. It's balls hard, basically. But in a way that I actually quite liked, and you may know if you're a regular listener that intentionally hard games tend to turn me off. I get frustrated easily. But this reminded me of those Hyperlight and Hollow Knight bosses and Ender Lilies. And I always think that if you can get a boss down to 50% health on your first go, then you at least know you have a fighting chance. And in these boss runs, I was incrementally getting better from run to run for sure. The boss had about, I would say, 8 attacks, including a big sweeping laser beam that you have to dash through, an area of effect ground pound, some projectiles, some heat-seeking projectiles, a melee combo, a couple of charge moves where they are coming across the arena. So there's quite a big move set to learn. But as you do learn it, you start to internalize how to avoid each attack. You start getting it to the second phase and then halfway through the second phase. Unfortunately, time ran out before I could actually beat that boss. But the demo is on Steam and I downloaded it immediately when I got home that evening. Because this Nano Apostle boss rush game just really got under my skin. I really wanted to complete that boss and I felt like I could. So if that sounds good to you, you can pop over to Steam and download the Nano Apostle demo. It is coming out this year. And I think it might have been my favourite game of the show. So that's a funny coincidence that the first thing that I played was probably my favourite, and certainly the one that I thought about most since the event, and I'm planning to play the demo repeatedly, I think, to try and get past that boss. The demo actually has 2 bosses in it. So it's a good slice of game. There are 8 in total, apparently. So that was Nano Apostle. My second appointment an hour later was for a very, very different game called Pine Hearts, developed by Hyperluminal and published by Little Nook. This one is expected in Q2, so we can expect it by the end of June. It's a cozy game. It's an isometric cozy game with a bright, colourful palette, these little tubby characters that look a little bit like Duplo, if you remember that, like cuddly, sort of chubby Lego men. You arrive at a campsite in a national park kind of area, and you run around, you get to the campsite, you talk to some people, there are some problems in the area, there are campers dotted around, like little families trying to toast marshmallows, there are explorers, there are rangers, there are hikers, researchers, and as you walk around, you meet all of these people. Some of them have little quests for you, whether that is collecting their lost tent pegs, or going to find someone who's gone for a walk and hasn't returned, or rescuing a dog that has run away. And you get rewards for those. You get some currency that you can use. You get some abilities that you can use. There is gated exploration in this game. So a little bit of that light Metroidvania stuff of learning how to push down trees to cross gaps, learning how to hop over balancing posts to cross rivers. But it's very, very lightweight. It's very, very jolly. I had a nice calm time with it. And it was a welcome change of pace after the intensity of Nano Apostle, which left me with my hands shaking from concentrating so hard and my heart beating fast. It was really nice to come and play Pine Hearts, which has more of a summery, short hikey kind of vibe. I don't think right off the bat from what I played that it's at the level of a short hike, but you know, not everything has to be. I think that Pine Hearts could be a nice game to play. If you have kids, I'm sure they would love it. If you want a relaxing, chill game to play before bed, I think it could be just that kind of game. So that one will be out by the end of June, if all goes to plan. That was Pine Hearts. The publisher Fireshine also had a really big stand. They were showing off several games, and they had both sides of a big 4-screen stand. But the one that jumped out to me was Gestalt, Steam and Cinder, which you may have seen in the recent Nintendo Indie World Showcase. This one has a date. It's coming out in just a few weeks, on May 21st. It's developed by Metamorphosis Games, published by Fireshine. It's a steampunk action platformer with a story-forward kind of thing going on. So lots of characters, lots of backstory. It had a very long intro that takes you through the game world's history, the fall of humanity, the arrival of machines, all of that kind of stuff. But once I was let loose, I slipped into it pretty easily, actually. The gameplay was really good. The first mission is to infiltrate a factory along with some NPC accomplices who vanish off on their own little trails and then pop up here and there to talk to you. And I really like the way that the gameplay felt, actually. You have a really high jump in this game. You really feel like you are flying in the air when you jump. You can mantle onto ledges. There is a wall jump that you have right off the bat. Very snappy combat. There is a melee attack, a ranged attack, a dodge. You have to learn the timing in the game, so enemies will... they'll take a couple of hits and then come for you. So you can charge up to an enemy, hit them once, hit them twice, and then they pull back their sword as if they're going to go for you. You can roll through them and then finish them off from behind. There was decent enemy variety in the opening stages, with various enemies requiring different tactics, like electrical enemies that sent charges across the floor or shock you if you are too close, ranged enemies that shoot 3 bullets in a certain sequence, and then combinations of them that made things a little more complex and put a few wrinkles into that gameplay. So you have to dodge the projectiles and melee attacks to take them both out without getting hit. There's also some RPG stuff. There was a quest log. You'll meet people around the factory that give you little side quests. There is an inventory, upgrade system, all of that kind of stuff. So it has some RPG stuff in there as well. I had a good time with it. I didn't finish the demo. I got quite far into it. I played half an hour. And I had picked up several side quests on my journey around this quite large factory. And so I started finishing them off and having to return to the quest givers to hand in my quest and get my reward. But that's where I came up against the only thing that I was not so keen on in the game, which was the map system. I was looking for a guy to hand in my quest. I selected the quest in the journal, but his location didn't appear on the map. The map is actually very simple. It's just like these blocked in rooms with a wire between rooms when there's a door there, no detail at all. And so I felt that the map needed more information on it. It's a very rudimentary map, and in that big labyrinthine kind of space, actually, with lots and lots of steampunky stuff going on, you know, lots of wooden crates and cranking machines and narrow passageways and platforms to jump up and down, it did start to blend together a little. So I think a little more detail on the map would have helped me to orientate myself to see where I had been, to see where I was going. So that was my only criticism of that one. But I think a lot of people will really like it. It does have snappy gameplay and a cool style. That's Gestalt Steam and Cinder, out on May 21st. As I did mention, there was a huge Devolver stand that had Pepper Grinder, Children of the Sun. What else did they have? Cult of the Lamb. They had a big Cult of the Lamb show with the DLC. But the only game that I hadn't played on their stand was Cricket Through the Ages. I hadn't even heard of this game. It turns out that it came out quite recently. It came out on March 24th. It's developed by Free Lives, who made Terra Nil, but they also made, I think, Broforce and maybe Genital Jousting. So this is more in the spirit of those other games. It's not very Terra Nil-y. It's a very physics-y two-player combat game. And me and Kieran stood around looking at this game a lot because it looked like a lot of multiplayer fun. And we played it together. We played against each other. It's based extremely loosely on the history of cricket. For example, in the first round, one player is playing as a caveman who is holding a rock. The other player is playing as a dinosaur. Very simple, colourful graphics. If you hold down the button as the caveman, you swing your arm, you windmill your arm. And when you release it, you release the stone. If you're playing as the dinosaur, you just mash the buttons and try and sort of ragdoll your way over to them to kill them. The controls are very unpredictable and chaotic, and I guess that's part of the fun. But you can learn how to throw in the game. And as you work through the caveman versus dinosaur section, you'll work up into medieval times with shields and arrows, and then eventually to actual cricket with people in cricket uniforms playing the game. And you can take out the stumps, you can knock off helmets, you can kill the other player. It's a one-hit kill kind of thing, so you just have to get the other player, whatever that takes, in any round. It was very, very chaotic. There is a scoring system and there is a winner and a loser, but it all feels pretty loose and wild. Some of it was really fun, actually, like playing as a mounted knight versus the queen, or dinosaurs versus astronauts. It has a party game vibe, and it does mash up the levels after a while. After telling you about Cricket Through the Ages, it just turns into utter chaos, really. Very silly, very fun. A million miles away from like more technical, tactical, combo-based beat-em-ups. But if you regularly play multiplayer and have someone that you think that it would be fun to play that with, that was Cricket Through the Ages. It is out now. And I think one of the bells of the ball in terms of always having a crowd around it was Paper Trail by Newfangled Games. This one is also coming out on May 21st on all of the consoles, Mac, PC, and mobile. Mobile is good for this one, actually. I can imagine it being good on a touchscreen after having played it. There is a demo on Steam if you would like to try Paper Trail out now. This game had just one seat available in the hall, and it was constantly in demand. I never saw the seat empty. I think partially because it's gorgeous to look at. It has lovely, colourful graphics that are somewhere between cartoony and illustrated and painterly. Just very, very charming. Nice to look at. And the demo does give you a big chunk of game, including quite a lengthy tutorial that shows you how to fold the world, because that's what you're doing in this game. It's a top-down game where you're walking around trying to get from A to B, basically. But sometimes A to B is not so simple. For example, if there is a bridge that is incomplete. But you can reach down, you can grab the corner of the screen and fold it like origami, like you're folding the game world. And by doing so, you change the game world. So perhaps you can fold the paper and make the bridge complete, then cross over, fold it back, and then get out of the exit. That's the basic premise of the game. And as you can imagine, there is room for the complication within that. So with that established, folding the pages diagonally, folding the screen horizontally and vertically and in different ways, and folding multiple times to get the front and back of the paper, allows for a lot of different puzzles. And I can imagine this one getting more challenging as it goes on. So it's a kind of devious puzzle game, but also very, very attractive and approachable. I would say that it had a strong vibe, and it was instantly understandable what the game is from looking at the screen. It has won a lot of awards already and has been featured in a lot of showcases, so I imagine that most of you will know that one. I would say outside of the Devolver games, it's probably the one that I would bet on to sell well and do well out of the gate. That's Paper Trail. You can try out the demo now or buy it on May 21st. And the last game that I'm going to mention in this section, at least, was Zephon by Proxy Studios. This was next door to Paper Trail. And so as I was waiting for Paper Trail, which I spent a little bit of time doing on a couple of days, actually, because there were so many people interested, I noticed that the seat for Zephon was often empty. So in the end, I just took the plunge and jumped on. It's a deep sci-fi turn-based strategy game with a 4X style going on. Really nice key art for this one. It had an attractive booth. But when you start watching it, it's a pretty menu-heavy game that doesn't look and is not actually instantly accessible. And so perhaps not the most ideal game. It was very interesting to see it next to Paper Trail and to see this one very complex game and this one very simple game and how people responded to them as they were walking past in that busy showcase environment. But I am really glad that I sat down and played this one. The person who introduced me to it was an impassioned community member. This one has apparently been in early access for quite a while, and some people have hundreds of hours in it already. They ran me through some lore, some gameplay basics. It's set in a pretty cool sci-fi world with various different factions. There is an all-powerful AI. There is an alien race that is strange and Lovecraftian, and then the humans. So it's a mixture between Terminator-esque automatons that are out to destroy everything, and then these Lovecraftian tentacle monsters and psychic beings and that kind of thing. So gothic sci-fi in a really cool way. There is a few seed characters that you can choose from. They all have different abilities that you can use in the battles. I started off in one corner of a map with a vehicle and two squads of humans. The guy said that humans are the best place to start if you're new to the game. If you've played Command & Conquer Red Alert, you might know what this one plays like. You start off in one corner of the map. You can see the whole thing. It has a fog of war, but as you explore, it uncovers the map. Around the exploration, you will find resources. You will find installations that you can take over that will give you more capability to build and so forth, more resources, more range. And then you can build a city. From that city, you can start to generate more units, captains, vehicles, and start to build up your army. And there will be other factions dotted around the map who may attack you or whose bases you may discover. And I guess that the aim of the game is to wipe them out, much like Command & Conquer. I played for about half an hour, and I had an interesting one, actually. The guy who was watching seemed a little shocked that I met this giant floating alien very early on, like a big tentacle monster with one eye, and it started to mind control my units, and I just lost them until I could take it down, but it had a really lengthy health bar. The guy actually didn't advise me to start again and reseed my character, but I thought I would just go with it. So I battled them for a while. I lost a bunch of units, and it was fun, actually. It was fun to just succumb to the game and the RNG, and even if it was never going to be a winning run, I was only playing for half an hour, so it didn't really matter. I am going to download the demo for this one and try it again, because that taste was good. I do think that it has a very compelling world. The only dings against it are probably endemic to the genre. I would say that although it is visually slick, the UI was a little convoluted. Sometimes I wanted to check the progress of something that was being built, or check the progress of research that I was doing to try and create more complex, capable units. And it all felt a little tucked away. I think that, I mean, Command & Conquer is obviously real-time strategy rather than turn-based 4X. But I do think that this game didn't do a great job of making its various systems accessible and visible. So I think even if I knew them inside out, some of the buttons are just a little bit small and fiddly. I think it could perhaps do with opening up that UI a little bit, but it's definitely a game that's for a specialist audience, and maybe they care about that stuff less than I do. That was Zephon, a really interesting game and one that I'm glad I played. In the back, outside of the main exhibition hall, there was an area dedicated to some other kinds of games. There was one area dedicated to student projects. We played one called, I think it was called Rova, R-O-V-A, that had a Sable-style visual. And they were still working on the movement model, but it was very, very cool to look at. It had like this moon exploration, vehicular aspect to it. So you head to a base, you pick up tasks like go and scan 5 alien life forms or go and scan minerals to try and find resources. Then out you go in your rover and you drive around this very cool looking Mobius-inspired lunar scape. Very cool game, and they'd only been working on it for 6 months apparently. The vehicle controller was a little bit all over the place. It was very slippery, skiddy, hard to control. But if they've been working on it for 6 months, it's a student project, then it was very impressive. It's called Rova, R-O-V-A. So look out for that one in the future. Who knows where it will go. But I think my favourite area of the whole event was the Curios area. This was a discrete little table with just 10 or 12 screens back to back. Some of it was quite tight and you were kind of pushed against the wall. So it was kind of shoved in the corner a little bit. But this was the place where there were interesting, artistic, Gaming in the Wild type games, I suppose, by solo developers, some of them, or small studios. So I've got a few of those to talk about as well. One that caught my eye initially was called Data Garden by Shaman Garage. It's out now on Steam, only costs £4, and the developers describe it by saying it's a textless comic game hybrid about data, interaction, and digital identity, playable with only one button. And it was, you just hit spacebar to move things along. It's a very minimal game with some design sensibilities to it. The graphics are line drawings against flat backgrounds of things like Instagram posts, complete with the window and the UI, plants, maps. Some elements are interactive in each scene. You click on things to make other things happen. It's quite simple, like you have to roll the dice and see all of these Instagram posts flashing by you. And then when you hit pause, it stops. You have to heart each one. Just that kind of thing. It reminded me a little bit of Madison Carr's Birth. Low-key interactions to move things along, but it's different every time. You get different graphics, different types of interaction. Clicking on things makes other things happen. There's a little bit of pattern recognition, and the whole game takes about 10 or 15 minutes to play. And for a couple of pounds, I think it's worth it. So if you listened this far into the podcast, if we're past the half-hour mark, pop over to Steam and buy Data Garden. It's just $3 or £4 or something like that. Give it a try. That was a nice little find. Right next to that was a game called Echo of the Waves, developed by Onira Games. It's coming soon on Steam, so no release date for this one, but it was a very pretty 2D exploration and puzzle game with lovely watercolour graphics. I would say it's adjacent to something like Gris. I just still don't know if you pronounce it Gris or Gree. I will never know, probably. But in terms of look and vibe, the game resembles that for sure, with dashes of something like a Highland Song, where you're skipping between parallax scenes, and the environmental puzzles. It reminded me a little bit of the kind of thing we saw in Hellblade 1, where you see shapes in the environment, then you notice them, select them, and it moves things on. The way it works in this game is that you explore small islands from a side-on 2D perspective, and you will run past things that look distinctive, for example, half of an archway with the other half that has collapsed. And that's in the foreground, and then in the background you might see a drooping tree that is leaning in the other direction. And if you pause at just the right point, the two will meet and form an arch. You can then play your instrument by holding down a button, and a line of light will appear that traces out the shape of the arch in the foreground, the tree in the background. That then forms a bridge, and you can flash between foreground and background to progress the game. That does mean there's a bit of a hidden object feel to it sometimes, and that's not a kind of gameplay that I like. I don't particularly like that stuff in Hellblade, where you're scanning the environment looking for triangles made out of branches or whatever. It feels a little bit abstract and tedious to me, but I think some people must like it because it's a really popular genre. So my taste in genre is nothing to do with this game specifically. I think it was well made and on a good track. So if you like the sound of Gris with hidden Highland song pattern recognition stuff, then keep an eye out for that one. It's called Echo of the Waves. Two more to go, and I've saved the two best for last, really, apart from Nano Apostle. I think these were my two favourite things that I tried. The first one's called Wax Heads, developed by Patati Games. The developers described this one as cozy punk, like hyphenated cozy punk, a cozy punk slice of life narrative sim about managing a struggling record store, chat to quirky customers with unique tastes, explore a handcrafted record collection, fall in love with bands and their drama, or just slack off with your colleagues, all to restore the groove. This was a really fun one. It's a shopkeeping game with process-driven gameplay, a little bit like something like Papers, Please or Mars After Midnight, which I talked about last week. So it's procedure-driven gameplay, and that means that instead of in Papers, Please, where you are stamping passports, in this game you are selling records. People come in, customers arrive at your counter, you see a portrait of them, they ask for a record, but they're not always particularly specific. Sometimes they are. They start off quite easy, like they will know what they want, like the latest record by a certain artist. Those are very easy to find. You just walk around the store. It's not exactly free roaming 3D. You click like a left and right button to look at different walls of the store, and you can pick records off the shelf. You can examine the records. You can see the cover art. You can flip it over. You can see the year that it was made. You can see a description of the record. And so you have to use clues that the customers give you to find the right record for them. And when you've picked a record, you bag it up, you check out, and then you get a score based on how well you did, based on the information you were given. But they do get pretty difficult. I mean, one kid was in there looking for the latest record by a band that their big brother had recommended. They didn't know much about the band, and they seemed very fresh and new to the whole thing. You know, they're just buying what they were told was cool. But if you search through that band's catalogue, you will learn that they have three records, that the latest one is experimental, dense, inaccessible, and that the first one is considered to be a good entry point into their catalogue. So you can choose to not give the customer what they asked for, but rather to recommend the record that they need, then you'll get maximum points. Another one of my favourites was a mumbling customer who could barely speak and seemed very awkward. And they said, "Is it out yet?" and not much more. But by looking at their badges that they were wearing, by their tote bag they were carrying, and the band t-shirt they were wearing, there were two bands there. And I thought, well, which one do they want? And I looked at both of those bands' catalogues. Neither had a record that had recently come out. But then I found a collaborative record that had both bands on it. And the back information on the record said it was by people from both bands. And so that was obviously the one that I needed. So you had to exercise your judgment. You had to observe and read. And I thought it was quite clever, really. It is a simple loop, but there are other bits of gameplay too, like designing gig posters using stamps and stickers. And the developer did say that there will be other variations on the gameplay to break things up a little bit. But the thing that I loved about this one is that it really did capture that indie record store feeling. So if you are a fan of like vinyl records, of indie record store culture, of indie music, of, you know, what band is new, of following contemporary trends and that sort of thing, it's a game all about that and that culture. There are old gig posters all over the store that are appealing. There are knickknacks and record store clutter. And really fun characters that you will recognize if you've been in that world, like, you know, old timers and up and comers and band members and all of that stuff. It was a really good time and one of the most polished games that I played at the whole festival. No release date on that one, but you can wishlist it on Steam. That's Wax Heads. And the final game that I have for you is called Cracker Nuts. And this one really jumped out of the curio section. You know, if you're walking around and your eyes are passing over a lot of games, some just grab you, and this one really did grab me. It's developed by Hairy Heart Games, which is run by Joe Bain, who was there on site on the day when I played it, so we had a nice little chat. And they say Cracker Nuts is a narrative game about a goat-headed girl and her sister, a no-bodied head. They are on a quest to find themselves and rescue their village from a curse of darkness. But the thing that caught my eye about this one is as I was walking past, the visual style was unlike anything else I saw at WASD. It had a very tactile feel to it. It felt like the visuals were related to puppetry or stop motion, but without the kind of ragdolly awkwardness or stiffness of puppetry. It felt like They looked like puppets, like whittled, carved puppets, but they also had very expressive movement. You could see some physical movement in characters that were expressing something. It's entirely voice acted. It uses light very interestingly too. The whole thing had a very strange lean-to feeling that I quite liked. But to actually play it, in the demo you start off walking through a forest, it's third person, and the camera is behind you, but it kind of scrolls around. You're really just pushing forward, but you are a goat-headed player character walking through a dark forest with a disembodied talking head for company. And it has great light and shadow, like the way that the light played over the tree trunks and sent these strange shadows radiating around the forest was very vibey and cool. And after a short walk, you arrive at a witch's hut. You walk inside, there are various puzzles for you to do. You set down the head, which talks to you as you're doing stuff. It will ask you for light, so you have to light candles. It will ask you for heat, so you have to set up some logs and light a fire. And by doing so, you're kind of carrying out a ritual, after which a witch appears and talks to you. And there was a really interesting long scene with lots of dialogue and back and forth between the head and the witch, who was prowling around the cabin like a... I don't know if you've seen Pan's Labyrinth, but there is a creature in that film that holds its hands up to its eyes with open palms facing forward. It's kind of a creepy gesture, and the witch in this game reminded me of that. So it has a very cool Guillermo del Toro style dark fairy tale feel to it. The long scene was really cool. I actually felt at one point like I was watching a play or something, like that combined puppetry and live action and video game dialogue. So very, very interesting game. It was really one that stood out from the crowd, I think. There was nothing else like this on display, that's for sure. It sounds like it's still in the thick of development, so there's no release window for it yet. But I look forward to playing the finished thing for sure. You can wishlist it on Steam now, and you can see a video of it in motion. If you would like to see the visual style that I'm talking about, search for Cracker Nuts on Steam, and you can check it out. So that was a really fun week. It was fun to go to my first ever video game showcase and to see all of these games in motion. It was really fun to meet all of the people that I met. It was great to meet Louis from 3HR, Aaron, Gareth, Damian Martin, of all people. Really fun time. The Indie Gamer, I met so many good people and such a good time. I have to say a big thank you to Kieran for keeping me company. Kieran is wonderful company and is a great person himself. So I had a good wing person. And good backup and good moral support, because these events are very fun, but they're also very draining. There's a lot of stimulus going on around you, and so it's important to be with people that you trust and like. But I had a great time there. Nano Apostle was a game that I'm still playing, really good. I also talked about Pine Hearts, I talked about Gestalt, Demon Cinder, Cricket Through the Ages, Paper Trail, Zephon, which I'm looking forward to playing more of, actually, in a strange way. I wouldn't have expected that a 4X strategy game would be the one that I would focus on, but I'm going to download the demo and try that one. I also talked about, in the Curios section, Data Garden, Echo of the Waves, Wax Heads, and Cracker Nuts. All of those games have pages on Steam, so if you're interested, you can pop over and look at them, you can see videos, you can add them to your wish list. And overall, big thank you to WSD for having me and for the Creator Pass. I really did enjoy the event, and it was nice to be part of something like this after all the FOMO of E3 and GDC and PAX and Gamescom and so forth. It was really nice to actually go to one of these things, and if you get the chance to go, I say go for it. It's lovely to be amongst video game culture when we are so immersed in this scene and this hobby. If you were at WASD and you'd like to tell me about a game that I missed, you can find me on social media as Gaming in the Wild. I will also mention the YouTube channel. I'll be making a video about these games too if I can find trailers to put one together. And there is, of course, the Patreon if you're interested in supporting this podcast at patreon.com/gamingintheWild, where I will be putting together a little voice diary bonus podcast for people that would like to hear the sound from the floor and to hear me and Kieran's thoughts as we travelled around the event. The sound quality might not be up to snuff, but it's a good time anyway. But I'll wrap it up here. I'll be back next week with a new episode. But until then, take care of yourselves and each other, and bye-bye for now.